Do you know that feeling when everyone is talking about a movie that you haven't seen? Have you ever felt compelled to make some vague comments just so you can join in the conversation? Well, what if you were in too deep? Do you think you could convince everyone that you'd seen it? Or do you think your version would be so much better that no one would care? Here at Faking Movies, we're always the ones who haven't seen the movie.
Anything you can do better. I can do anything better than you.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
Sometimes after biting a dinosaur, a man on the branch of a tree and gets stuck in the sap. After a long time, that sap hardens and becomes fossilized, just like dinosaur bone, preserving the mosquito inside. This fossilized tree sap, which we call amber, waited millions of years for the mosquito inside until Jurassic Park scientists came along. Using sophisticated techniques, they extracted the preserved blood and bingo, dino DNA.
I can't believe Lee just let him go that long. That's amazing. Unprecedented.
I wanted to hear the rest of it.
Of course. It's a thrilling story.
Yeah. So welcome to Faking Movies, a podcast where apparently we just talk about Jurassic Park now.
Every
fine
week.
By me. Fine
every
by
single
me.
Week.
Every week we just have Seth do that monologue. And that's, you know, that's our intro music that you've come to know and love. Yep. Seth just mumbling the Mr. DNA.
They finally intro. Busted us on that very copyrighted song. So this is all we got. this is life now.
Well, and as you know, of course, I'm Lee, and I'm here with my dear friends Seth and Zach. How you guys doing today?
Doing great.
Seth is okay.
Zach is also good. Great.
Wonderful. Well, Lee's ready to fucking party.
Yeah.
This is episode 47, everyone. Who would have thought? Yeah.
Jesus.
Doing it. Really coming up on them big ones. Yeah.
Yeah, we got some great stuff planned for our anniversary time frame. Just you wait. But in the meantime, as usual, this is a show about cinematic blind spots. And this week, we had a pretty good one. Because this is a blind spot for Zach that Seth and I, I know that I really love this movie. And I think that Seth maybe
has opinions.
Doesn't like it as much as he remembered liking it, but
yeah,
that's something we'll talk about. As we go this week. And of course, before we get started, guys, please check out our website, fakingmovies.com. Thank you again to friend of the show Lucas for helping us streamline that, and of course, thank you to spoiler future guest Marielle for really just killing our Twitter feed right now. There's some great shit on there. At Faking Movies, check it out. Zach, you're up this week. Why don't you tell us about your shit?
Yeah.
So this is a movie I've for sure heard the title of, but have absolutely no idea. A movie called A Fish Called Wanda.
Wait a second.
No?
We watched Hotel Rwanda.
It's still funny the second time. I like it.
All right. Well, cool.
I mean, we already made that joke. Yeah. Okay.
I like it.
Yeah. No. Fish Call Wanda.
Yeah. All right.
What actors and actresses did we give you?
Yeah. Four peeps. We got. I guess I'll group these in the way that I mentally group them. Starting off, John Cleese and Michael Palin. Palin.
Mm-hmm.
Notably, both Monty Python folk, as I recall.
Yep. Yes,
that is true.
And yet, I'm almost certain this does not. It's not a Monty Python movie.
Are you sure?
I don't recall. So the other people.
Yeah, it's not a Monty Python movie.
Yeah, other people, Jamie Lee Curtis and Kevin Kline, which would be a bit out of place in a Monty Python movie. So, yeah, but great cast. Gotta love them.
I mean, the female characters in Monty Python movie can't just be the guys in drag. Like,
well, yeah, mix it up every once in a while.
That's great. It's usually just the guys in drag.
Yeah.
Still,
yeah,
real kids in the hall kind of thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so yeah, I have a couple that got
one might even say that the kids in the hall were the original Monty Python.
I certainly would.
That person would be would have a very loose grasp of how time works.
Steve Zahn, perhaps, yeah.
Maybe.
I mean, people often misconstrue some of the greats, like, being, you know, copies of other things. Just like people think Romeo and Juliet was first, but we all know West Side Story.
Oh man, I really hope that you were going to end with Romeo plus Juliet was first.
Hey guys.
Oh, that is a good one.
Why didn't Baz Luhrmann just do a remake of West Side Story? Like, wouldn't that have made much more sense
for
him?
Well, Marielle, if you're listening, get on that Twitter. Is he still alive? Probably. He's not that old.
Baz Luhrmann is, still making movies.
Well, let's fucking make that happen, huh?
All
that
I really care about is John Leguizamo as Tybalt with them silver heels.
Oh, so good in that. And Michael from Lost.
A shoe fit for a man named Johnny Legs, if I'd ever seen them.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah. The Bard was a hack. Anyway.
Wow. That is inflammatory.
Oh dear.
I also like that you still referred to him as the Bard when you were shitting all over him.
No, I'm just saying that he stole it from West Side Story.
Oh, sure, okay. Sure. Yeah.
Revisionist, and, but yeah.
Yeah. And that stole it from Tristan and Isolde, and that stole it from Romeo plus Juliet.
Uh-huh. Oh, it's full circle. By the way, guys, speaking of West Side Story, how do you solve a problem like Maria?
I want to be in America.
That's not from West Side Story. That was a joke for basically our listener Sarah, because I many a times have infuriated her with that exact joke.
That's a good one.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. That's
confusing.
It was
It's from that Nazi musical.
Oh,
the one about Hitler Youth?
And
Julie Andrews is in
Das Producers? Yeah. Oh, no.
Springtime for Hitler.
Yeah, that one.
I was born in Dusseldorf, and that is why they call me Rolf.
I bet we could definitely get somebody to do that for the podcast. Surely someone has not seen that.
It is one of my favorite movies. I love that.
I know.
I'll watch that anytime.
Oh, yeah.
Do we have to bleep out all the German stuff just now? Like, what are you talking?
Guys, most of our guests don't actually listen to our show.
Ah, good point.
Like,
good point.
Four listeners.
That's true.
Most of our guests aren't actually guests. Is that what you're saying? All right. Well, anyway.
Make your movie, bro.
Maybe Liz the sequel will come on. I bet she's seen that.
Yeah,
probably. She lived it. So,
I mean, she lived through the OG, so, you know.
Yeah. Okay, so didn't really know what to do. This title's a bit weird.
It's a pretty inscrutable title.
Yeah. But, on the one hand, that's tough. On the other hand, it leaves a lot in the open. So, you know, could be fun. Hopefully fun.
Did you make a sequel to Skybus?
No, shit, I really, really wanted to. Like, Fish is right there, right? Like, I went a different direction. So the first thing I was thinking about doing was a kids movie, because notably we've not done one yet. I guess the friend of the show Jess kind of did Shrek and whatever.
It was a little more kid friendly. Yeah, she did her Arthurian Few Good Men.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
and Twins with White Shrek is a pretty kid friendly movie.
Oh yeah, so Shrek comes.
Yeah, it's about mattresses and
right,
White Shrek
and White Shrek.
So that didn't really pan out, because I don't know, it's kind of hard to make like a compelling kids movie. They're all like very clever, and I couldn't be as clever, so
I feel like Pixar would have to stand up and debate you on that. But
the obvious thing is like do the Nemo universe, and that's just not all that interesting. So then I was thinking about alternate meanings for Fish. Ended up on New Fish, like from prison. And that was going one of two ways: either Orange is the New Black, which isn't really very novel, or like male prison, some new guy called Wanda, and that gets real dark real quick, and so I just kind of scrapped the whole prison thing. So naturally I ended up on Urban Dictionary, where all hope goes to die. So first thing was FISH as an acronym stands for fuck it, comma, shit happens. And that's kind of useless unless you're making like a weird Juggalo movie.
That could be fun.
I was thinking more like R-rated bro comedy. Like,
Yeah, I guess there's that new movie that they keep calling Blockers that is very obviously called Cock Blockers. But
oh, the one where in all the trailers they do a sound effect of a rooster crowing and then say Blockers.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's
that movie is supposed to be really good. So.
I mean, don't believe you.
John Cena, National Treasure.
John Cena's
in it. There's a lot
of
very funny people in it, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Fellas, I know you love wrestling, but...
I just don't actually love wrestling that much. Just John Cena's fucking great. He's wonderful.
All right.
Yeah, so back to Urban Dictionary. I then hit the jackpot for sure, but we'll get to that later. Perhaps at the end of
the
movie.
Is going to be some inscrutable Latin bullshit like I always pull. Ooh, I like it.
It's not quite as inscrutable, but yes.
Let me ask a question here. So... what you're proposing is that your whole movie is going to be based around a reveal of a title meaning from Urban Dictionary?
I mean, this is a common thing we do, I feel like. Right? No?
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. Yeah.
It's a thing I do in like every movie, so...
Yeah, I mean, mine will be at the end. Oftentimes we get to it a little sooner, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Should be fun. Alright, so... we're going to open on John Cleese getting towards 50. Notably, I think this was like an 80s movie, probably. Uh-huh. I don't know. Doesn't much matter, I guess. John Cleese is like older. He's at his bank job, sitting at a desk, doing nothing, staring into space. Michael Palin, his boss, walks up and has some dumb boss bullshit to say.
I thought it was like Palin or Playlin. Is it Playlin?
I have no idea how he pronounces his own name.
I got one L in the last name, but I could do Palin. I could do Palin. This is literally the only scene he's in. Doesn't much matter. So.
Okay. Well, there we go.
Yeah. He says some dumb boss joke. John doesn't even really acknowledge him until he realizes that, oops, he asked him a question. He recovers not so gracefully, asking him to repeat himself, and he's asking about some account. John says, yeah, I'll take care of it, even though that wasn't actually the nature of the question. So he's very sort of checked out. Mm-hmm. We cut to John's dining room with the classic stodgy, no one is having fun, sitting too far away from each other type dinner scene. He eats mostly in silence with his wife, Jamie Lee Curtis, with monosyllabic answers to her very sparse questions. So by now we're getting that his life is sort of boring and unfulfilling and like nothing fun is happening.
Sure.
We next cut to the country club. There's some scenes here where John's doing his best to seem like one of the guys, feigning all of the things he thinks people care about in this world, but obviously not enjoying himself. Suddenly, there's a commotion at the bar. The whole table looks over to see a very drunk Kevin Klein arguing about something with the bartender.
Excellent.
Kind of flailing around, accidentally spilling things, breaking a glass, and then ceremoniously being ushered out of the whole thing. It's a big scene, as you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone looks around awkwardly and sort of tries to ignore it, as this is like a high society kind of deal. But John, without even thinking, is drawn to...
stuffed shirts.
Yeah.
All right.
We all know the type.
Where does this take place, by the way? What country?
It's... let's say, like, Massachusetts, America, probably.
So, are Cleese and Palin doing just their best, worst American accents?
Oh, shit. Interesting. Yeah, probably. Yeah. Why not?
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Monty Python was big on doing characters with American accents. They would just, like, overpronounce things.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And Terry was American, which was, like, a point of contention, right? Because they were like, who's this fucking guy, I think.
Yeah, but fuck Terry Gilliam. He's the worst.
Yeah,
one.
Fuck him to death. And his stupid new Don Quixote movie.
That movie's not supposed to come out. The fucking world's going to end.
The end times.
We need Steve Zahn to save us, for Christ's sake.
Oh, it's happening.
Steve Zahn, you need to do battle with Terry Gilliam in order to end the apocalypse.
In other time space.
I would not have picked Terry Gilliam, but I guess he is. He's been mounting his forces for all these years.
Mm-hmm. I feel like he makes a convincing, real world, being John Malkovich playing
monster?
Himself.
Yeah,
monster? Yeah.
Yeah.
It totally works.
He's got as he's aged, his head has started to look more and more like Dennis Hopper in the Super Mario Brothers movie when he turns into King Koopa.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Or like Dennis Hopper in Waterworld.
Or like Dennis Hopper in real life.
Or Dennis Hopper in Blue Velvet. Or
like Dennis Hopper, a dead person who's decomposing.
Ooh. Oh. Well.
that was kind of a bummer.
Let's get back to the movie.
Anyway. So there's a bunch of Kevin Klein being rushed out of this place like hammered drunk. John Cleese, without even really thinking about it, follows him out because he's drawn to just anything that's of any interest whatsoever in this very boring life of his.
Sure.
So Kevin is physically shoved out into the parking lot while the aggressors of the situation note that they're not even sure how he got in here. He's not a member, blah, blah, blah. John sits there stunned. He's like, so he's a very sort of shy, passive guy. So he stares silently at him in awe. At this sort of reckless abandon, which is now wonderfully appealing to him because it's exactly the opposite of his own sort of persona. Kevin gives the usual...
Oh, okay.
Kevin gives the usual, what are you looking at, remark as he stumbles off, and John sort of is confused and shakes it off and then returns back to the club and his regular boring life. We cut to the next day. He's leaving work, and he sees Kevin, coincidentally, walking past the exit to his work in a rather flamboyant robe and a hair wrap, looking just terribly fabulous. The intrigue immediately increases tenfold, and on a whim, he decides to sort of covertly follow him. A couple blocks down, Kevin goes into a basement bar called Ladies' Night. Without even thinking about it, John follows him in. He probably see where this is going.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. It's the regular avocados on Tuesdays kind of
So without even thinking about it, John follows him in. He figures out very quickly, to his great surprise, that this is a drag bar. He's, of course, embarrassed because of his general persona. And he goes to...
broken, like, stodgy American shit.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Like, uptight. Yeah.
So he goes to leave, but at that exact moment, the lights dim and the song comes on and someone hits the stage. He turns around and is immediately captivated. So, we cut to sort of weeks in the future. He keeps coming back for weeks and weeks, secretly after work, to watch all the queens go up, and it's amazing to him. Like, he just loves it. Finally,
so he's like becoming a regular, but he's not talking to anybody, is he? He's kind of like
trying to be as under the radar as possible. Yeah.
Yeah. He's got on like a pair of sunglasses and his collar's flipped up, and he's even more noticeable than if he had just gone in as himself.
Been normal. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So finally, after all these weeks, Kevin finally takes notice of him and sits at his table rather abruptly one day. John's very flustered, but he entertains the whole thing because, again, it's exciting, which is a thing his life is lacking. This goes on for a few weeks until John wanders back into the dressing room one day, again, sort of inexplicably. In these moments, he's, like, taken over by this sort of, he's compelled to do these things because, like, again, his life is so boring otherwise he just can't, like, help himself.
It's different than what he's used to, and it's just that alone appeals to him, but maybe on another level this specific experience is something he's really enjoying.
Yep. So this is like during the day, it's like 4 p.m. On a weekday and barely anybody's there. So he walks into the dressing room. No one's there in the dressing room. And so he sits down and automatically just starts putting on makeup again in much the same fashion. Like, he's overtaken by whatever this is. He realizes he doesn't really know what he's doing or why he's doing it. And everything's sort of a huge mess, but he keeps on going to the best of his abilities. Kevin walks in and sees him and teases him, but encourages him to keep going. And he even helps him with his makeup and a wig.
This is like that scene in Burlesque when Cher helps Christina with her makeup.
A little bit. So Kevin then quickly ushers him out and onto the stage. John is very startled by this. Like, he obviously didn't think this through, and certainly didn't think he was, like, he was just doing this sort of automatically. So he immediately tries to run off, but Kevin physically drags him back up onto the stage.
Right, because he was just going on instinct, and now he's self-conscious about it.
Yes,
because
he has snapped out of the trance. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, and now he's back to being, right, self-conscious and whatnot. So he looks around and he notes that there's really only like two drunks there, like half sleeping, barely paying attention. So he has really nothing to lose. So he staggers around awkwardly, not really knowing what to do, and then gets, again, sort of overly embarrassed, and he storms out, wiping off the makeup as he leaves and leaving the wig on a table.
Sure.
And he returns to his real life and pretends that it never happened. So he goes back to normal life, and after a few weeks, he finds himself sort of longing for this thing that was the first bit of excitement and happiness that he's had in several decades. We press fast forward a bit. There's lots of him going back and finding himself, being mentored by Kevin. Jamie Lee notices that he's even more distant than usual, and calls work one day to see if he cut out early, to see if he wants to cut out early and do something spontaneous with her, perhaps to spark things back up.
Sure.
Michael Palin, his boss, I guess he is in another scene, barely. Michael Palin, his boss, notes that he's been cutting out early a lot and going to some bar he thinks, he's not really sure. He says it's down the street. So Jamie Lee hangs up, thinking this is very strange and out of character for him. Like, this is not a thing that he would do, because she knows him, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And so she goes down to see what this is all about, figuring there's not that many bars, she'll find him. So she goes to several of them, doesn't really find him, and then sees Ladies Night, kind of wanders in. And of course, as is common in movies, as she walks in, John happens to be the next performer and comes out to dance, and inevitably meets eyes with Jamie Lee as she stands in the doorway.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Everyone is very confused, and there's a big scene, and she's all jazzed up. And in the moment, she reveals to him that she has cancer and has been silently struggling with it for a year now. And he never noticed, and this is why she's trying to rekindle things.
What the fuck,
Zach?
Hang on.
Wait. So, this isn't going to just be like the Room version where it's like, I got the results. I definitely have cancer, and it's done.
I mean, there. I am no director. There's probably like an elegant, crafty way to do this.
Oh,
I don't know
what
it is.
Okay.
Your point is duly noted.
You have to put like a fucking diseased lung on the kitchen table when they're eating dinner. Or something.
Sure.
And like, you know, yeah.
Because
of the lung earlier. I get it.
Oh, yeah. There it is. Yeah.
That was your lung?
It's a little subtle hint for the audience. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We are stupid.
So John doesn't know what to say. He reverts to his previous self, where he's just stunned and silent and frozen on stage.
Mm-hmm. He does that face very well. That's a very good John
right. I could picture yeah.
mannerism. Yeah,
it does come up in this movie a lot.
Okay.
Yes, it does.
So Jamie Lee storms off after his like disappointing non-reaction, and John hangs there for another minute until he finally retires to the dressing room. We cut to 6 months later with a sort of title card that says as much, through a sad montage of John and Jamie eventually reconciling, and sort of Jamie is, you know, okay with this new weird life of his, and John is sort of you know, very sad about the terminal illness, but you know, they make up and sort of bond over it. And then inevitably ending on Jamie Lee's funeral, unfortunately. Her headstone, however, reveals her name, Wanda. So John eventually returns to the drag club, embracing his new life. This is bringing him happiness in this time of like ultimate sadness. We end on stage, John taking the spotlight, very confident now. And we pan to Kevin in the booth drinking something impossibly gross, like perhaps just a sweet vermouth. I don't know. That's all I can come up with. I
think that's like, we know?
That's
how
like a
know?
It's like a Hedwig thing, I think. Vermouth on the rocks, right?
Or he's got like sherry.
Yeah. Something not to be done.
The sherry has a wonderful bouquet.
The sherry is impeccable, don't you think so?
Yeah. So
Frasier's great.
That Wait, has Frasier, been a hot topic lately.
Frasier the character or Frasier the show?
Both.
I highly disagree in the character. The show is great, but Frasier is the worst human in the world.
Intentionally unlikable.
Entertaining.
Right?
He's an entertaining character.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, but he's just an awful person.
Also, he was nowhere near as bad on Cheers. I mean, he was just an inconsiderate person. He wasn't an actual evil monster.
Yeah. Sure. Like real life Kelsey Grammer. Anyway.
Yep. So Zach, you were at the end of your movie.
Man, we just talk about Frasier.
Hijacked everything.
It's all right. Such is the nature of the beast. What can we do? So Kevin Kline's voice echoes over the PA system. Please welcome to the stage, from humble beginnings, a fish called Wanda. So this requires some explanation.
Yes,
we realize that he took his wife's name as his drag persona. This could be construed as weird, but is actually his like very sweet tribute to her.
It sounds like a nice tribute.
Right, after like decades of kind of sad, boring marriage and life, they finally came together at the end, and this is his way of like paying tribute to that.
No, I know a lot of, well, not a lot of, but there are a couple of friends of mine in the past who are drag queens who have discussed how they like had very influential and important women in their lives, and their personas are named thereafter, which as kind of an homage sort of thing. So this seems totally like within the realm of possibility to me.
If you're gonna pick a name, like, why not don't make
somebody
it random, like,
you
make it
super
cool.
respect yeah
yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. So more importantly,
it's sweet, like it sounds like I thought that sounded very sweet.
More importantly, the joke here is that fish refers to, famously, a very passable drag queen. They also use the term serving fish rather unpleasantly to refer to, I believe, based on my research, unpleasant vaginal odor. But it is used in the drag community as a compliment to sort of refer to a queen's feminine and very passable, convincing appearance. So this is his
nod. A thing that I don't know that I would say about John Cleese necessarily, but he's also only been doing drag for laughs for his entire life, so he's not actually trying to look like
a woman. He's only got 30 years experience for the goof drag. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Sure. Yeah. So that was the ultimate conceit, and then we roll credits. And that's the whole thing.
So it's sweet on two levels. It's Kevin Kline, his mentor.
Yep.
Passing on, like, yes, you have made it.
You've done
like,
it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the really wife. Nice. And also, John Cleese now has this life that he could never attain before. And he's just let himself go into this world of freedom. And it's great. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I gotta say, Zach, I think that was you were a little down on your movie before we got started here.
I wasn't sure.
I think that was a really sweet movie.
All right. All right.
Why do we keep doing sweet movies, fellas? It's so tough. Sentimental recently.
I know. We're getting old. We're getting old.
Yeah. I'm on the wrong side of 30 all of a sudden. I don't know.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Oh, you two even more than me. Yeah.
Uh-huh. We old now.
It's a true fact.
Ugh. All right. Yeah. What's this thing all actually about? Tell me all the stuff.
Do you want the IMDb one sentence summary?
100%, yes.
Mm-hmm. So A Fish Called Wanda is 1988.
Okay.
And so here it is. Sometimes, after biting a dinosaur, a mosquito would land on the branch of a tree. And it's...
No, we can't do it
sorry, twice.
I think it was... is a sweet old man, but he's not going to let us get away with it.
He's very litigious.
So litigious.
And he hates the idea of streaming movies getting awards, apparently.
Man, hook, line, and sinker on that one. That took me a solid 3 seconds. I was like, you son of a bitch.
You are a master of your craft.
Yeah, I know.
That was...
Anyway,
he's on the job market, folks.
On the job market.
Do you need goofs? Because we got your guy.
In London, four very different people team up to commit armed robbery, then try to double cross each other for the loot.
Oh, love it. That's awesome. Okay. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a crime movie, but the crime is ultimately all in the, like, just in the first 5 minutes.
Okay. Is it also serious, or is it a comedy?
No, it's a comedy.
Mm. Okay. It has to be, right?
With that cast? Dudes?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
The movie has far more to do with the characters interacting with each other than the crime is there as, like, it drives the plot, but yeah. We don't see much about the crime.
Sure, mm-hmm. Sure. Okay. Cool.
I'll get started. I really love this movie, but if you want, Zach, I can go a little more in depth.
Yeah, give me a short one.
Okay, so Jamie Lee Curtis, Kevin Klein, Michael Palin, whatever,
yeah.
and one other actor, not notable. I can't remember which is which. The actor's name is either George Thomason or Tom Georgeson, and the character is the opposite.
Yeah, it's
oh, Tom, wow.
The actor's name is Tom Georgeson. And mm-hmm. The character's name is George Thomason. So it's
very, very fun. Very, very
yeah.
fun.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So movie opens with them doing a robbery, and there's, you know, they stash the loot. But Jamie Lee Curtis is dating George, the main guy, like the ringleader of the gang.
Okay.
But secretly she's also with Kevin Klein. And yeah, he's an American in there. They're both American.
Kevin
takes
Klein
place in London.
Is he American? He's American.
Yeah, right? Yeah, he's American.
Okay. Yeah.
So it takes place in London, and both of them are American characters.
Mm-hmm. Pretending to be siblings.
Werewolves?
Pretending
perhaps?
To be siblings.
Probably not.
Hmm? Yeah.
What was your question, Zach?
American werewolves or not?
No, they are in London though. Yeah, yeah. I mean, if they are, I don't know.
Sequel,
there
I guess.
There aren't very many scenes at night, so
that's a
this
great
joke.
Point.
This joke did not work at all.
Although there is one, yeah, there is one scene where both Klein and Curtis are together at night. So
oh
I guess it
yeah,
work out.
That's
yeah,
true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't get to see the moon in that scene.
Oh so. Yeah, it's probably a new moon.
Mm.
Well,
waning and whatnot. So
a gibbous, probably a gibbous waxing.
Sure, sure.
Why not? Yep.
Yeah,
all the cheese has been eaten by the sun. So
Jesus.
A dinosaur. No, so they
is
oh,
that
boy.
The that's the last ditch goof effort now?
Yeah, we gotta
dinosaur,
get out of,
I don't know.
No, oh. We gotta get out of this. We gotta get out of this moon hole. So, or a crater, as a scientist refer to it.
Yep. Okay.
Sure.
So yeah, Jamie Lee Curtis and Kevin Klein's characters are secretly together, but they're pretending to be siblings. Yeah. They tip off the police so they can get George arrested, basically, and out of the picture. Because they don't think Michael is a threat. Basically, he's like the demolitions guy on the team. His character stutters, and there's a lot of stuttering jokes.
Of course.
Movie.
Yeah, which is pretty uncomfortable.
I have some,
but...
yeah, I have some background info about that.
Okay.
That makes it, on the one hand, worse, on the one hand, better. We'll talk about that later.
Okay.
All right.
So, basically, George hides it somewhere, and they don't know where, but he gets caught, and then Jamie Lee Curtis and Kevin Klein go on this side scheme to figure out where the loot is, and that wraps John Cleese into the story. Because he is the barrister appointed to defend George.
Oh,
so
fun. Okay.
He, much like... Oh, and by the way, Jamie Lee Curtis's name is Wanda.
Mm-hmm.
So you were right about that.
Right.
Yeah,
of course, yeah.
Michael also has a bunch of tropical fish, and one of the fish he named after her. So that's where a fish called Wanda comes from.
Okay,
it's his favorite fish.
Yeah.
Right. I could not possibly figure out, even after you said, like, heist movie with goofs, like, still the fish part is yeah okay
yeah,
so it's a throwaway essentially, like it doesn't really
well, it's somewhat important to the plot,
it becomes important. Right. Yeah,
okay.
Jamie Lee Curtis gets involved with John Cleese to try to, like, seduce him to get, you know, she's playing every side. Mm-hmm. Basically and making Kevin Klein's character look like an idiot the whole way, because his character is a huge idiot and he doesn't know it.
Is Kevin Kline delightful in this? He, of course he is. He's got to be.
He won a fucking Oscar for this movie.
Yeah. Oh, damn.
Amazing.
Okay. Yeah. He always is.
But he definitely, the character is definitely, you know, that one kid who's way into guns and was in your intro philosophy class. And is just like quoting Plato and Nietzsche.
And the Second Amendment.
Yeah. Like, but
there's a really great scene where Jamie Lee throws all his wrongness about philosophy into his face. Oh. It's very good.
Fun. Okay.
So anyway, John Cleese's home life, it's very much like what you described. He's got
That's spot kind of, on.
Boring. Yeah, like a very boring, passionless now marriage, and you know, like very unhappy at home.
There's a montage scene where John Cleese and his wife are getting undressed for bed, and it's very like passionless and boring. And
robotic.
At the same time,
it's very
Jamie Lee Curtis and Kevin Kline are like having very upsetting sex, but it looks like nobody is having a good time. But like, it's supposed to be really passionate and sexy, but man, it just seemed unpleasant.
I have some trivia about that stuff.
Oh, okay.
We watch an alarming number of movies with like unpleasant sex in them.
I think that's just movies.
Could be.
So the John Cleese side of that sex scene is very. If you've ever seen Monty Python's Meaning of Life, there's a scene where he plays a schoolmaster teaching sex ed. It's very reminiscent of that scene.
Yeah. Okay.
I need to reveal a thing. I think I've seen one half of one Monty Python movie ever in my life.
Zach, it's totally fine. You're all right.
Okay. Like, I enjoy Monty Python,
but it's because I got into it as like a teen.
Yeah.
Like
a very early teenage. I kind of grew up with it. And there was a lot of nudity and a lot of like slapsticky jokes sort of
I tried because it's in the zeitgeist and it just wasn't my deal. I was just like didn't do anything for me.
I think you're fine.
I think that's totally
reasonable.
You're probably fine.
Canadian Monty Python, however, love that Kids in the Hall.
Love those kids
They're like the Canadian whitest kids you know.
Sure. Bit of a combo. Which came first? We still can never know.
Yeah. Time is cyclical after all.
Jesus.
So to kind of be brief on the summary portion, Jamie Lee is playing everybody basically. Yeah. Sure. The climax is at Heathrow, where Jamie is getting on a plane with basically whoever gets on the plane with her.
Yeah.
To fly to Rio with all the money from the heist. Stephen Fry makes a cameo at the airport.
Yeah, hey, I noticed that.
Okay.
Yeah, single line cameo, and he gets pushed out by Kevin Kline.
Yep.
Cool. Good deal.
And then it ends up at the end that John Cleese, who I guess they established maybe that her character likes him better than she likes Kevin Kline. She has no reason to despise him yet the way that she despises Kevin Kline. I guess.
Okay.
It's
but they end up on the plane together and they fly away, and then we get like little bumpers about what everybody did after the movie.
Okay. So who's is there a lead in this? Is it Jamie Lee Curtis? It feels like it, but
she's more of like that femme fatale character where she's a supporting role, but she's maybe more important than the other characters.
She definitely seems to drive the whole thing. Like,
It's a lot of the movie is about John Cleese's pursuit of her and like how he destroys his own career and
marriage
and is embroiled in this whole mess with these other hooligans. That's pretty much the main drive of the movie, is basically John Cleese pursuing Curtis.
Maybe we could say that the main drive is John Cleese pursuing a more fun, you know, interesting life.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Likewise, that's definitely there.
much like Zach's movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So was this, this is well after all the Monty Python stuff, obviously.
Oh, but, yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, this is
was there, like, a famed director in this or anything? Was this, like, a John Cleese vehicle? Did he write it or something? Like,
yes. Okay, so this is, John Cleese wrote it with the man who directed it, Charles Crichton.
Mm-hmm.
Who is this is the last movie he ever made. I mean, he lived for much longer after this, he was an older gentleman at this time.
He did
and John Cleese and him had known each other for years.
Hmm.
Yeah, he did a lot of movies in like the 40s and 50s and then did some shows in for the rest of his career, really.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And you know, like I there's the whole Michael Palin subplot of this movie that we could talk about briefly reminds me a lot of like a The Lady Killers or like Kind Hearts and Coronets, that style movie.
These
British dark comedies around crime and stuff from the 50s. Mm-hmm. And it turns out there's a real good reason that's the type of movie that this director used to make.
Got it.
He was a director for the studio that made all those movies.
Okay. I had just assumed, like, Cleese is, like, extremo famous at this point and can do whatever he wants, and he seemed to feature heavily in the plot, so I assumed that he had to have some, like, other hand in this, probably. But
He is co-writer of the screenplay. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Cool. All right. Well, you all got some, it sounds like a polarizing-ish movie, so.
I mean, I think we definitely have some things to say. Seth, do you want to go first, or?
Oh, I don't even know what I really have to say. Like, I just didn't, I remember seeing this movie, you know, years ago, and, like, laughing a lot at it, and I just didn't laugh this time.
Like, it was upsetting, or, like, just
not
funny?
No, it wasn't upsetting, it just seemed fine.
Mm-hmm.
It just seemed fine to me. Like I didn't find it as hilarious as I feel that I had found it 10 years ago.
Yeah. All right.
And the Michael Palin stuttering thing, like, it's really awkward. Like, it really, like, it is palpably frustrating.
This might be a good time to talk about that then. Some of the things I found out about that is, for one, his father apparently had a very pronounced stutter for his whole life.
Yeah.
And he tried to model his performance on the way his father would stutter, including when he was with characters that he trusted, he would speak more clearly.
Oh, sure. Oh. Right. Yeah.
That's uncomfortably personal. Oof.
Yeah. I'm not saying that his performance was bad, because it was very, very true. Like, people that I know that have had severe stutters, and, you know, in some of my work in the past, I've worked with stutterers. And, like, it's just...
on the job market.
It was just really, really, like... And this actually maybe is a plus for the movie. Like, I felt super frustrated with them. Like, with Michael Palin, I felt frustrated the entire time as people were being such assholes to him.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be intentional,
especially,
right?
Especially Kevin Kline's character, especially, is horrible to him.
Yeah.
I assume that's intentional.
Horrible,
like,
to
that's,
everyone, but yeah.
That's to elicit exactly that emotion, I presume, right? Mm. Like,
yeah, presumably. And I think it was very, very effective with me.
Mm.
Well, and I guess after when the movie came out, like, regardless of how his performance, how, like, accurate or whatever, there were some stuttering advocacy groups that were not happy about it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. I guess to his credit, he like ended up starting an entire fund for like a school for children with stutters. Like,
that feels
it's,
like
it's like runs to this day. Like, he has this
this is, as is often the case, a matter of like what was the intention, and if he had personally dealt with that in his family and like it was to bring attention to it, then I think that's totally fine. Right, like that's the whole thing. Yeah.
That being said, and this maybe makes me a terrible person, there are two really famous scenes dealing with characters trying to get information out of him while he's stuttering that I find just incredibly hilarious. I don't know. It sounds like Seth probably did.
I didn't. I didn't find. I mean, one is obviously the chip scene, right?
Yes, the chips.
What's the other one? We'll discuss the chip scene in a second. But
well, the other one is the second half of that scene when John Cleese finds him. Yeah,
I think
that's the scene that I find much more entertaining.
The John Cleese one, because he's not torturing him, is a lot more palatable to me, and also like it's still like I felt frustrated with the actor, but it's a lot more. Well, it's a lot less shitty, I guess.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I know that Kevin Kline is supposed to be shitty. I just, like, it just made me uncomfortable in a way that I didn't really care for in a comedy movie.
I mean, I think that's totally fair.
Yeah, like,
we have the advantage of it being we're in this particular time loop where the movie happened well before.
Yeah, indeed.
Trying to make the audience uncomfortable is a comedic device, but it doesn't sound like they were using it as such in this movie.
No, they were playing the stutter for laughs.
So do you want to talk about the chip scene, and then I think I only have one other point. So
So the chip scene is we find out at some point that Michael Palin's character knows where the loot is and knows where the key is to get into it. And Kevin Kline finds that out. So he ties him to a chair, basically, and tortures him. And I forget how long. It's like, clearly over the course of a while.
Yeah.
And he, like, he eats his fish in front of him.
Michael Palin notably loves animals. Like, he is a major animal lover. And there's a subplot where he has to murder a bunch of dogs, and that's a whole nother.
Well, he has to murder a witness who is an old woman, and he accidentally keeps killing her dogs, and he was just heartbroken by it.
Yeah.
Like, he goes to all their funerals and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, that's kind of fun, I guess.
Yeah.
It's very slapstick.
It's very slapstick. I didn't have a problem with that at all.
But he's torturing him, and it gets to the point where he's like, what goes so well with fish? Chips! And he's jamming French fries up his nose, and he's sticking food in his mouth to kind of, like, suffocate him and try to draw this info out of him. And
while eating all of his tropical fish.
Yeah,
which in of itself sounds very unpleasant. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I guess Kevin Kline offered to actually eat fish for the scene, but they were like, "No, that's awful. These are made of Jello." Like,
yeah, please don't. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were Jello jigglers.
He's just going full Daniel Day-Lewis on it. He's like, "No, I must eat fish.
I must eat these fish."
Oh man.
I missed those
Jello jiggler commercials. Yeah.
Yeah. Jello jigglers were always disappointing because you had to use much less water, so they were just concentrated pork fat. Like,
yeah, it was not. Yeah,
so chewy. Tasted a lot worse. Yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So he's torturing him, and there's actually this is a confirmed report apparently of a man in Scandinavia. I think it was Sweden. Who died laughing during that scene?
Whoa!
In a movie
yeah.
Oh, like cardiac arrest, something, something.
Yes. Yeah, I think so. His heart rate became elevated to the point that it killed him.
Wow. I mean, that's very sad. But I bet the Monty Python fellas were like, "Yeah, we did it.
We finally did it.
Looks like we made it.
Yeah, exactly.
If only Graham had not died, we would have loved it. Yeah,
very sad. Very sad."
And then the follow up scene is John Cleese finds him, and he is far more gentle with him because he's not trying to torture info out of him. He's trying to, like, "Hey, tell me where they went, and we'll go get them." You know. So,
yeah.
And I think that scene's much, much funnier. But,
yeah. Uh huh.
Yeah.
Sure.
Jamie Lee Curtis is great in this movie. She is, I think
oftentimes,
she...
Kevin
Kline, like, steals every scene he's in, but Jamie Lee Curtis is...
Well...
Comes across as the like, I think she is easily the smartest character, the best character, like...
Yeah.
Nice. I was gonna say, like, I'm trying to place this in her career. So, like, Halloween was...
70s.
Yeah.
Very early? Yeah.
Yeah.
But she was, like, fairly established by this point, I think.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, this is like this trading is Trading Spaces.
Trading
yeah.
Places was like 2 years before that. Yeah,
Yeah. Okay, cool. Okay.
Michael Palin does get his revenge on Kevin Kline, though.
Yeah, he runs him over with a fucking steamroller.
Yeah.
Oh, the most classic of all the comedy goofs. Yeah. Does he show up like Looney Tunes style, fully flattened at the end? Or?
No, but he survives.
Yeah, he's not like the judge in Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah.
That movie came out the same year.
That movie gave me nightmares. So.
Yeah, weirdly dark. That, yeah.
Oh, fuck. That movie definitely gave me nightmares.
It's a good flick. Yeah, like Kevin Kline is just this idiot, and he spouts wrong philosophy all the time. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun. The sex scene that Seth was talking about, there's some funny backstory to it. Mm. The character of Wanda is one of the things her turn on is Italian, speaking Italian to her,
and later Russian,
and later Russian, we find out. But Kevin Kline's character is speaking Italian to her to seduce her.
Sort of.
And he's just spouting off nonsense.
He's like reading a menu. He's like a spaghetti bolognese.
Manicotti.
There's a story behind this. Kevin Kline speaks fluent French. He asked the director and John Cleese, he's like, hey, can I just speak French in this scene because I don't know Italian? And they're like, no, your character's an idiot. If you speak French, you won't be an idiot. So he starts speaking Italian and it's just names of cheeses and stuff.
This is a Family Guy starts, joke where they're like pepperoni.
He starts to sing Volare, and he said, "Yeah, the only reason I started to sing that is because I couldn't remember any more cheeses."
Not bad. Yeah. That's pretty fun, yeah.
Yeah, and then later when Jamie Lee is trying to seduce John Cleese, we find out that he speaks Russian.
Sort of.
And that's even, well, in the movie's universe, he speaks Russian. And that's more of a turn on for her, and she's like, maybe I like this guy.
So that Russian thing, he actually he's reciting a poem. In the first time he speaks Russian, the second time he speaks.
So I don't remember. I'm not sure what poem it was exactly, but Seth, correct me if I'm wrong. Was it like it was mid 19th century, right?
It was actually.
How could you possibly know this?
I mean, I had to memorize this poem back when I still did this for a living. So
I mean, I took lit surveys at different this points. You know, things sound familiar.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. I mean, but anyway. This poem that while John Cleese is trying to seduce Jamie Lee Curtis, remember?
Right back into it. Yes.
Was this poem called Molitva, which is like the prayer. And apparently John Cleese did not know what in the hell he was saying. He was just doing it phonetically. So I was like listening to this and I'm like, his cadence is really good. Like, what is this thing? And then I was like... He's just completely bullshitting it, because near the end of the movie he starts speaking Russian again, and he's just like doing exactly that thing that Kevin Kline did, where he's just
place names
saying and words. He's like, Gorbachev, Perestroika, Glasnost, and they're like, Glasnost, so sexy. I love openness.
Also, I would like to point out that in that scene he gets on a fucking international flight after having just stood in a fucking oil barrel full of oil. Mm-hmm. They let him on the goddamn plane, like dripping in oil.
Well, 1988 was a time to be alive.
Yeah, pre 9/11, I guess. Yeah. Oof.
I mean, you know, first class passengers can get away with anything. Yeah, so.
that's true.
Yep.
They did have a shit ton of diamonds.
Yeah, that's true.
Sure.
Also, I'd like to just sing a little, like, praise for John Cleese's fucking cut in this movie.
He is in
great shape.
You'd say, like, does he have, like, a feminine-ish figure? Would it be, like,
he's actually kind of beefy.
Yeah, he's pretty beefy. Shit.
All right, well, I tried.
Maybe somewhere on the road between wiry and beefy.
Oh,
wiry.
Ooh, the caravan.
Oh, man. I just rewatched that movie. Whew.
Me too. It's super good.
Oh, man. It's on the Amazons.
Yeah.
I'd be happy to do a mini episode about that movie where I can get out my feelings. We already talked about this. Yeah. This isn't important.
It's been bleeped 5-6 episodes now. Yeah, like we've covered it.
What else? Do you have anything else you want to talk about in the movie, Seth?
Do you want me to recite this poem? No, I'm not going to do that.
Because I'll just some moments I really like. Yeah. Kevin Kline's character is like the violent. Tell me about how they extract DNA from Amber.
I don't speak Russian, but I am fairly sure that was the speech in Russian. That's got to be Jurassic Park, right? It's got to be.
It's true. I was talking about Jurassic Park.
Straight anyway, to Laserdisc.
Kevin Kline's character is supposed to be like he's the violent one of the group. Like he's the if you need to the kill someone, guy. He's gonna be the guy to do it.
Yeah.
His character, I don't know if they ever confirm this or not. He says that he used to be a killer for the CIA.
Yeah, he says that a lot, but I don't know if it was ever substantiated.
That also sounds like a thing a not killer for the CIA would ever actually talk about.
Sure. Yeah. So he shows up at John Cleese's house at one point, and he gets caught by John Cleese's wife there, and he puts on this show where he says he's an American agent and they're like spying on these Russian people and they were just alerting the neighbors of what's going on, and she's like, well, and she has this amazing scene where he gives her this crazy fake name. I think it's Manfred Jensen.
Yeah.
And she replies it right.
Well,
right
Mr. Manfred Jensen.
Yeah. That's fun.
And explains to him exactly why he's wrong and an idiot and why she knows he's wrong and an idiot. And it's just this great
That was a good scene. I did really enjoy that.
This character that really like gets nothing to work with and we're supposed to hate, and they portray her like just a real awful shrew kind of thing, and like she gets this moment to like just be okay, here's these guys are idiots, let's let the pros deal with things here.
Nice.
And the only other thing I want to talk about, Charles Crichton got nominated for Best Director at the Oscars for this.
Oh, really?
And at the BAFTAs too, and he might have won the BAFTA, but I don't know that I don't think it was like a very interesting, like very good directed movie. Like it looked like a really good TV show.
Yeah, that's how I felt. Like I felt like this movie was okay.
See, I love the movie. I just like I've heard this old adage of like a great director can save a terrible script, but a great script can't save a bad director. And I think maybe this movie has an amazing script and like a mediocre director, and that's why maybe some of the stuff doesn't hold up the way that.
That's entirely possible. Yeah.
Okay. I just looked up. Best director was Bernardo Bertolucci for The Last Emperor in '88.
Sure.
That means nothing to me.
That is actually the award ceremony for 1987 movies.
Oh, right on. Okay.
Jesus, how do you know that? Why do you know that?
Yeah, why?
Because I know that Last Emperor won Best Director and Best Picture at the Oscars, but in 1988's Oscars, when A Fish Called Wanda was nominated, it was Rain Man and Barry Levinson.
You knew that off the top of your head? Because that is 100% correct, yes.
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah.
This movie is on all kinds of lists as like pretty high up as like one of the funniest movies. It's like 27 on 100 funniest movies of Bravo and
And like in a lot of British lists for like best American made British movies, because it's technically an American movie.
Sure. Well, you said John Cleese won Best Actor. Was that
he won Best Actor at the BAFTAs?
At the British one.
Yeah.
And Michael Palin won Best Supporting Actor at the BAFTAs. Wow. Neither of them were nominated for the Oscars, and Kevin Kline won the Oscar. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, Kevin Kline. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Cool.
For Best Supporting.
That's a good take overall. That's really not that bad.
Yeah. Hey, why not?
Yeah.
One other weird like trivia. This is the longest amount of time for a movie to debut and become the number one movie in the United States.
Oh.
So it
What do you mean?
It debuted at the beginning of August, and it wasn't the number one movie in the country until the end of September.
Wow, weird.
So it was in theaters for almost 2 months before it became the number one movie.
That's nuts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very weird. I feel like most movies don't make it 2 months in the theater these days.
Yeah. No, even huge like tentpole movies are around for like maybe a little more than that.
Yeah, weird. Huh. All right. Well, y'all want to rate some stuff? Should we do that?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, do you want the IMDb straight rating before we get into our ratings?
For sure, yes.
It is a 7.6.
Damn! Oh. Ugh, we got to start doing shittier movies. I can't compete with this. It's,
it's a 7.6 with 115,000 votes.
Oh, that's a bunch. All right.
Yeah. So, okay. Lee,
this is a well-loved movie.
Yeah, why don't you kick it off?
Yeah. So I'll add one. I have one little fact tying into the show here. Friend of the show, Eva, is a giant fan of this movie, and particularly Kevin Kline. So much so, he has a very mustache in this movie. And anytime she sees Kevin Kline without a mustache, it kind of upsets her.
I totally get that. Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, 7.6 for the real movie according to IMDb. I really like this movie. I hear everything Seth is saying. I watch it not infrequently. It's a movie that I keep coming back to.
Sure.
And I don't know if it's just become like a comfort movie for me or what, just because I enjoy it. But I would say I'd probably rate it somewhere like 8.5.
Oof. Oof. Yeah. Okay.
I think this movie is terrific. Mm-hmm. Are definitely things about it that aren't great. Like, I don't know if it's a well directed as some people might think it is, but the performances are wonderful. I think it's a great fun movie to watch really anytime.
Sure.
Your story, Zach, was so sweet. Mm-hmm. I was like, I was ready for fucking craziness, and what I got instead was just somebody who was like having a hard time coping and finding a thing that made them feel like they fucking belong.
God, we can all relate.
Say, like,
John Cleese's drag career was like our podcast career. It's just,
I know. Like,
SpaghettiOs.
Oh, it's a little purse, getting so personal. Oh, so dusty in these eyes. Or is it maybe just some foundation I've put on?
I mean,
inspired by the
this
great movie that you have. I do love wearing wigs. I don't know that I'm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't think I'm a person who would thrive as a drag performer. So I won't claim that. But
it's a lot of effort. It's a lot of effort.
Great.
You do like theatrics a lot. I feel like you would actually be a pretty good drag queen. Yeah.
You are very theatrical.
I'm a theater kid who never found a theater.
You're John Cleese. Yeah. There you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so sweet. And I don't know if it's just because the format of our show doesn't really lend to it. I thought that the turn that Jamie Lee had cancer was a little out of nowhere, and it kind of bummed me out a little bit. And I'm gonna dock you a little for that, and I'm only gonna give you an 8.2.
Okay, I'll take it. All right. Yeah.
But I did love your movie.
Excellent. I'm very glad. So yeah, the Jamie Lee cancer thing was a notable like days after edition.
Sure,
it was very linear and boring, I thought, initially. Like, it needed some sort of twist or like some
sort
of conflict.
I could see where the movie just has him leaving his wife and we don't really get to like it seem a little shallow.
Right.
It was a bummer. Yeah. I mean, it was a different kind of bummer. It had a redemption with the like ending that I gave it, and previously it was just like, oh, nothing happens, and then he's happy as a drag queen, which is fine, but not great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
We'll get on our typewriters.
Certainly.
If three faking movies hosts had three typewriters for all eternity, eventually we'd come up with a decent version of this script.
Yeah,
so.
we would do a low rent Birdcage, as I also did.
I didn't want to bring that up.
But. Oh, it was very obvious. Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's how it goes sometimes.
Hmm.
Hmm. Yeah, so Zach, I similarly enjoyed your moving picture show, also called a
excellent
show.
sure.
Or it's just a whole bunch of urchins carrying plates of daguerreotype and just running by really fast.
It's not ideal, man. But it'll work. Yeah,
that's the future I want to live in.
Yeah, well.
Urchin heavy.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I feel very similarly about a lot of the things Lee said about your movie. It was mm-hmm. It was good, and it was, you know, made me feel feels and bullshit and whatever.
The usual, yeah.
Uh-huh. Currently, that does seem to be our trend.
Yeah, weirdly, yeah.
So, but also, you know, in the last couple of weeks, you and I have been doing a lot of statistics on all of our ratings and stuff. So I just gotta start rating lower again. I've been too high for too long.
No, I don't want to hear that.
But I'm not gonna rate you as high as Lee, but I still enjoyed this, so I'm gonna give you a solid 7. Like I'd watch it, but I would probably like. I'd have to be in the right mood for that kind of
thing. On the Seth scale,
and we all know that I am
reasonable.
I am just the easiest grader on town.
Oftentimes, yes, mm-hmm. yes.
Yeah, we have, by the way, there's a Rate My Professor extension on fakingmovies.com, and everybody wants to take my class, so.
And we are all hot, 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 yes.
I was going to say, how many chili peppers we got?
I am second only to Professor Henry Jones Jr. Easiness, of course, yeah.
Because he just fucking leaves, and then fucking...
Yeah, because he just fucking leaves, yeah. You're named after the dog.
That was a weird Sean Connery.
No, that's Sala.
Oh, Sala. Yeah,
that's John Rhys Davies doing
John Rhys Davies.
Probably racist Egyptian person impression.
Oh yeah, that was
for
thing.
Sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now I rewatched that recently too. Regardless.
So fun. Real movie.
Yeah, the real movie. I am going to, like I said, like I just didn't laugh that much. There were a couple times that I laughed, but in general, like it was just like fine. It was fine. So like, if this movie is on and it's on in the background, I'd watch it, but I don't think I would seek it out. Unlikely. So I'm gonna give it like a 5.5.
Ooh. All right.
Oof. Stinker.
Well, sets back, bitches. Welcome back to the times when it's just like two generally amiable dudes and then a mean person.
Going back to the roots. That's good.
The doctor is in.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you all have cancer.
Oh no.
Well. Okay, so that's like respectable-ish, I suppose. I'll take it, maybe.
Yeah.
I think it's a win. It sounds like you won.
Yeah, you won.
It was. Yeah. As Seth noted, we have the stats real time now, and I am up by 0.4. So this is good. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That is some real sabermetrics.
Yeah, we're getting real money ball on this.
What's your
now?
WAR? What's your wins above replacement?
We got to work. We got to get a little deeper into it for that, but we're getting
I think I might have a pretty good slugging percentage. Tell me about that.
Oh, you're batting like a .285. It's respectable for sure. Yeah.
That's not that good. Yeah.
You guys are making all kinds of sound and theory, and it
catcher,
signifies nothing to me.
Talking baseball from Maine to San Diego.
All right. Well, so
what's coming
next
up next
week? Yeah. Next week we got the Twitter Yas Queen herself. Mariel, the OGML, doing Moonstruck, which is
exciting. That'll
I
be
am incredibly excited.
This is
a fun one.
Very good. Mariel, as is often the case recently, lots to live up to. It's just a tough one. Yeah, it's going to be very good. Very close.
I mean, not to cast aspersions so early, but Man, I fucking love Moonstruck.
I know.
Like, beyond any reasonable level.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it's a silly movie, yeah, but a good silly movie. Yeah.
It really is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay.
We'll talk about that next
week. It's okay.
Well, here we go. All right. Already started. Good deal.
Mm-hmm. Well, from our friends to yours, I guess Seth wants to say fuck you to
everyone. What? No. What I want to say is this fossilized tree sap, what we call amber.